You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 194. Today's show is all about a man who grew up in New Orleans music and now spends his life sharing it with others. The last show was exploring Louisiana and her history through the lens of a camera. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection over at 520 Royal Street. They are a terrific museum that's free and somehow continues to fly under the radar. You can check out some of their work online at hnoc.org/firstdraft. They are in between temporary exhibits right now, but their permanent exhibit in their newest space is really great. It traces 300 years of history of the French Quarter, and it does a great job showing not only the history, but the development of the neighborhood. And there's some interactive things where you can see it happen over time. It's a really great place, so check it out. I'll put links in the show notes, but hnoc.org to plan your visit. The most frequent questions I get are about moving to New Orleans, and if you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor. That's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help you whether you plan to rent or purchase. Look, New Orleans is a terrific city, but choosing the neighborhood that's a good fit for you can be a little bit overwhelming sometimes. Liz somehow makes that process fun and easy. Reach out to Liz at LizWoodRealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. A whole bunch of members of our Facebook community have done just that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. The other thing that sets Liz apart from other realtors is what she does after she helps you find a home. She does a great job at building community and helping you get connected with people in your area. So when you're ready to make New Orleans home, reach out to Liz. While you're looking for a home to purchase, you're probably going to need to secure financing. Reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Mortgage and let him help you get everything in place. That's what we did on our refi, and it was as smooth as could be. We went through the same process with Tommy when we were considering purchasing a new home, and it was just as easy. Again, I'll put a link in the show notes, but reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Mortgage. Now, on to today's topic. My guest grew up playing music and now does it professionally. He's well known in New Orleans for his brand of funk, and I'm happy to introduce him to you today. Welcome to the show, Mr. Sam Williams, better known as Big Sam. How are you?
Pretty good. What's happening with you?
Man, it's good to have you here.
Hey, man, it's great to be here, man. Look, and it's funny you mentioned Tommy, man. Tommy helped me out.
Did you really?
Yeah, you're right. So I can vouch for Tommy. Tommy's the man. Holla at him.
Thank you. Yeah, you're right. Appreciate that.
No problem.
He's a good guy. He makes it easy.
Yeah, you're right.
And that stuff's not easy, you know?
At all, man. We went through it.
Yeah.
And I'm self-employed. I'm a musician, so they bring us all, you know, through all kind of loops. I'm like, oh, my God, you know? But guess what? Hey, Tommy made sure it happened. He made sure it happened.
You're welcome, Tommy. I didn't know that was going to happen.
I want to say Liz was involved, too. I got to go back and check it out. But I was like, hold on, wait a minute, you know? But yeah.
You're in Gentilly. I know she does a lot in Gentilly.
Oh, yeah, I'm in Gentilly. Yeah, they really helped me out, man. It was Liz.
Yeah.
And I think it was Liz, too, man.
While we're getting started, I wanted to mention, we're sitting here at Lamara's Coffee Shop, right on the edge of Gentilly and the Treme.
Yeah, you are.
It's on Claiborne Avenue. It's a great little coffee shop. I like to highlight places that are a little bit off the radar when we do these interviews, and so I asked Sam to meet me here. Didn't realize his kids go to school right around the corner, so that's convenient. But check this place out. I'll put a link in the show notes. Great little coffee shop. So, you know, Sam, let's talk about, you've been a musician almost your whole life, right?
Ooh,
man?
Lord. Yeah.
When did you get your start?
You know what? I actually got to start a little bit later than your typical New Orleans musician, you know? So I started playing my instrument when I was 12.
Okay.
You know, but by the time I was 15, I realized I wanted to do something else with it, you know? So when I was 15, a sophomore in high school, myself and a couple other friends of mine, we started a brass band. You know, I'm jumping the gun right now, so we have to go way back.
Let's go back.
We have time today, you know, so let's go back.
No hurry.
You dig? So let's say, so I played in Livingston Marching Band. Hmm. They are located out in the east. Now it's a high school. It was a middle school back then.
Yep.
The size you see me at right now, I was about this size in middle school, you know, sixth grade. Sixth grade, I was like 6 feet. I'm 6'2 now. Sixth grade, I was like 6 feet. I still weighed like over 200-something pounds. You know, I was a big dude. I was Big Sam. I've always been Big Sam. I was playing basketball a lot back then, you know. man, it got to a point where it's not like today where they're like, look, if you're the age, if you're in this age group, you're going to play. You know what I'm saying? Back then, I was kind of too big, so they wouldn't let me play anymore with my age group. You dig?
Oh, yeah.
So they were like, oh, well, look, you're too big. You gotta do something else. I said, well, look, I'll just play with the older kids. But then they told me I wasn't old enough. And I said, oh, man, this is something, you know. So anyway, I was like, I got to find something else to do. I said, well, I like marching bands in New Orleans. You know, we got Mardi Gras, you know, we got the football games and all that. I said, well, look, I'm going to go join the marching band and see what happens, you know. So I get to the band room over at my middle school, and I'm like, hey, I want to be in the marching band. He's like, well, what you want to play? I said, what you need somebody on, you know. And he said, the trombone. I said, what is that? So he was like, well, here you go. Here you go. Go home with it. You know, back then, they would just give you an instrument. And you went home with it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
His name was Daryl Dickerson. He's still in the music business now. You know, he's getting it in. That was my introduction to the instrument, man.
Really?
And I picked up on it so quick. It was like it was meant to be, you know. I mean, obviously now.
Yeah.
But, man, I went home. I started, like, just trying to play by ear. Like, I was like, man, let me figure this thing out, you know? So one of the first songs I played was, like, When the Saints Go Marching In. I was like, oh, that's pretty easy, you know? My tone sounded like crap. But I was getting it. I was like, boom, 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 boom. It was horrible. But you could tell that's what I was going for. For my first time picking up the horn, it wasn't bad. Then I thought about marching band, so I was playing Wild Thing. I was like, boom, 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 boom. And then after that, you know, he was adamant about us learning, like, music theory and learning how to read music and, you know, be educated on that side as well. It wasn't just, like, play everything by ear, you know?
Yeah.
So I was really focused on that. And it wasn't until, like, my seventh grade year where I realized that, oh, I was up there reading with the upperclassmen, because we would have, like, concert band and we would, like, read certain charts. And they were reading it wrong. And I'm sitting there just looking on like, that's not right. And I'm not saying anything, but I'm in my head, I'm like, that's not right. I would have played it like this. And he'll always stop and say, no, that's not right. Let's do it again. No, it goes like this. And I'm singing it with him like, oh, that's how so I was like, oh, I know what I'm doing kind of, you know. So then after that, you know, that helped, you know, build my confidence and knowing what I was doing musically, you know. So from there on, man, my current trumpet player, Andrew Bingham, and our homeboy, Walter Woden Ramsey from the Little Stooges Brass Band, we all decided that in high school that we were going to start a band, and it's called the Stooges Brass Band, you know, and that was Walter's brainchild, and we all started that back in high school, and the Stooges still rolling today, man. What, 25 plus years later, they're still rolling, hitting
they
did their first second line in a long time, like a few weeks ago, you
all
know,
because
they stopped hitting the streets, you know, and they were doing more stage shows.
Yeah.
It had been a while, man. Got involved with those cats, and of course, it's a lot more backstory to go along with all of this, but that was like just the beginning of everything I was doing. Because even while I was in high school, starting with Daryl Dickerson, I started studying with Kid Jordan and the whole Jordan family, Ken Jordan, Alvin Fields, Brian Gazzere. Like, it was a whole bunch of cats that I was studying with. Alvin Batiste, Jonathan Bloom. The list goes on and on with all the people that we were studying with at that time, you know. And also, by the time I got to high school, I went to NOCA.
Right.
And
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, and that was the old school NOCA back on Perrier, you dig?
Oh, yeah.
So we had Clyde Kirk Jr. over there, who's an absolute monster, man. Very passionate about what he was doing. You know, like back then, you know, you could throw a chair at a kid and not get in trouble. You know, nowadays, hey, you might be put in jail. But it was out of love and for the passion of the music. You dig what I'm saying? They had to just express that to you. Like, hey, don't do that. Go like this. This is what it is, you know. It really, you know, I mean, hey, they instilled some fear in us. Like, we better learn this. But, you know, better not mess up these changes, you know. Nah, man, Clyde Kirk Jr. was the main cat over there. And we also studied classical music over there. You know, we had to learn solfege when we were singing and things like that. NOCA really helped us out a lot. And even then, like, you know, I'm absorbing all this information, not realizing how much, you know, I'm taking in until I wasn't going to go to college. I didn't want to go to college,
okay,
you know.
Yeah.
But my mama, she was still alive back then, and she was just like, she said, no, you're going to go to college. You're going to do something. So I got scholarships, especially when a trombone player, you know.
I had
full scholarships just about anywhere I wanted to go, man. I was like, I'm not going. I don't want to go. I want to just play music in college day, you know. I went to UNO for a year.
Okay.
That's where I realized that, man, like, NOCA was teaching us on, like, not even kind of like a professional level. Like,
yeah.
I knew everything that they would teach, all the theory. It was like, this is theory. It's just, well, what do y'all mean? Y'all don't know this. Like, it was new to everybody else, but all of us that went to Noka, we're like, oh, this is like ABCs. Like, okay, cool, you know? But now that's like, just like the beginning of my career where I really, you know, got things started, man.
Yeah. Well, for, you know, 12 is a late start by New Orleans.
Exactly. So I'm like, 12 anywhere else? Oh, that's pretty normal. Now in New Orleans, that's pretty late, man.
It's pretty late.
They expect you coming out playing. It's like, God, man, you know?
People don't realize back in that day, too, before Katrina, especially, everybody played them. You either were in choir or you played in the band.
You did something musically. You know?
So all the best rise up because everybody gets exposed to it.
Exactly, man. It's right there in your face, you know? That's one thing that happened with Katrina. A lot of the culture got lost, you know? Especially how well the marching bands performed, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because back then, like I said, we had discipline back then. We were like, look, we ran laps, we did push-ups, we were like disciplined, we were like focused on what we were doing. And nowadays, not so much, man, you know? And now, like, we're just now starting to, like, get that back. You, like, get back to, like, the discipline of marching bands and making sure that we sound, you know, we have that impeccable sound, you dig?
Yeah.
Because the kids, you have the roots of music that's, like, helping out with that, you know what I'm saying? You have Third Good Marshal that's, like, coming along. And now, since you have, what happened was people were getting to high school, never touching an instrument ever in their life. And now it's like, oh, we want to play in high school. Nah, you can't do that. You have to have someone else before that to like nurture these kids and be like, okay, look, this is what it is. By the time you get to high school, hey, I went to the K, John F. Kennedy, baby. We had the best band in the land, you know?
Right.
And, you know, argue with your mom about that. We already know what it is, you know? But, and we were under the direction of Walter Harris, man.
Yeah,
we called him Doc. And he passed away, you know, rest his soul, man. Yeah. But we were the best. You know, right now, they're not so much the best, you know? They done lost the school and the location, so they're in a whole different new location now. It's just not the same kind of vibe, but even still, they're coming back and, you know, getting back into the swing of things, man.
It feels like you see that just definitely after Katrina. We switched to charter schools, and we lost the, like, feel for what schools were, right?
Exactly.
I went to Brother Martin. I played clarinet, not well, but I played.
He said not well, but I played it.
I started playing when I was in third grade, and that was the thing, right? Yeah. No matter where you went to school, you learned a lot. You learned music, and you learned to appreciate music, even if you weren't very good at it.
Exactly.
And all the high school bands, it was a big deal, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's as much a part of Mardi Gras as floats are, throwing stuff.
Yes.
And it feels like in the last maybe just 2 years or so, you're starting to see that pride come back.
Yeah.
But public schools especially, they lost their funding.
Yep.
You talked about being handed a trombone.
Oh, yeah.
That isn't happening.
Nah, it's not happening now. Nah, not at all, man. And you look at it, you look if they have enough instruments to even, like, hand out to just play in a band at school these days, you know what I'm saying? Like, but back then it was just like, here, take it.
And
go
it's
home
so
with it.
Critical you know? To our culture, like
it
you're
really
talking
is.
About, man. Because you either you grow up and you play or you appreciate that music.
Exactly.
And that's something that was lost, and I'm glad to see it starting to come back. You're seeing the pride in some of the schools again.
Definitely.
You're definitely seeing it. You know, to march in a Mardi Gras parade, it's a big deal.
It's a huge deal, man.
You want to represent. You want to, you know.
You got to show out.
You do.
You got to show out, Cam. Nobody outdo you either, you know.
And it's obvious. You come down the street and you're playing out of tune. And you're marching in step, right?
Exactly.
Because the good ones show you.
Exactly. And people don't even know, man. Like, even back, a lot of people think this is new. This is, we've been doing this, man. Like, even before the parades, the bands were like, face each other and crank up on each other at the beginning of parades, before the parade even started.
Yeah,
like,
battle of the bands, man.
That's the real show, you know? Everybody, man, why you telling all the secrets, man? I mean, people are, like, finding out now, but even under the bridge, you go under the bridge on St. Charles, man, that's... They go crank up every time right there, you know what I'm saying?
They do, yeah.
It's just all part of the culture. We have fun with it. We love what we do, you dig?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
You know, another thing I wanted to ask you about, so your last name is Williams, but I have it on good authority that you are a Bolden. So nothing like a little pressure.
Hey,
you're a relative of Buddy Bolden.
Exactly.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I found that out later. I found that out as an adult. Actually.
All right.
Yeah, I was already, we didn't get into this yet, but I was already on the road with Dirty Dozen.
Okay.
At this time, I was like, 18, 19 when I found out, I said, like, oh, well, to me, you know, because I don't talk about a lot of stuff, I just be like, oh, that makes sense, because I play so loud, and not on purpose. It's just, look, you can ask anybody, when I play, I just play what I feel. It's not, I'm not saying, oh, I'm about to play louder than everybody. It just comes out, it really does just come out that way, and it's pretty damn loud. I gotta let you know, even like, you know, if you hear me at a festival and all that, like, you probably can't tell, like, the force that I'm playing with, but if you hear me, like, unamplified, you're like, God damn, what is a freight train coming through here? You know, and I can say that. I mean, I've heard it, especially, you know, I've listened to myself compared to other trombonists, and it's pretty loud, man. It's
Yeah.
It's pretty intense, you know. But yeah, but once I found out, man, I was like, oh, that makes sense. You know, and it's a lot of pride behind that, you know.
Sure.
But speaking of pride, though, it's like, even with myself, I'm kind of like the cat. Like, I want to be known for what I do. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to, like, that's why I don't talk about it much either. You know, one, yeah. There's not much information. Even with reaching out to family members, trying to find out mm-hmm. some things that other people don't know. It's like, the real, like, cat was just, like, out there, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just to himself, you know what I'm saying? So for me, I'm just like, I wanted to make my own name without having that. Be like, oh, well, that's why he this or whatever. Oh, that's why. Nah, I like to make my own name.
You still got to put in the work.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's why I'm glad that I didn't find out really until, like, I was already, like, out with Dirty Dozen. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Even back in from that, before I played with Dirty Dozen, man, you know, we had the Swedish Brass Band. And back then, you know, it doesn't happen as often now, but back then, kids were playing in the clubs.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
So a couple of, all my classmates, we'd be at like the Funky Bell, we'd be at Donna's, you know, we were like performing while we were in high school, you know.
Right.
In addition to that, I was also playing with the Soul Rebels at that time too.
Yeah.
You know, I played with them for some years. And I don't know if y'all remember Jazzland.
Oh, yeah.
Jazzland came around. Yeah. All of us, man, all the musicians were like, the Jordan Group was running that. And we all like performing there like every night, you know, every day, you know.
That's something people don't realize, like in the clubs, man. You know,
all.
That was pretty common.
Yeah.
14, 15 year old kids in a club
performing,
playing.
You know, and, you know, not drinking anything, you know, just there for the music, you know. You didn't drink till you might maybe like 16, you know.
Right, exactly. This is New Orleans.
This is New Orleans, right. Nah, man, but over at Jazzland, all of us were performing, and I was like, well, damn, I just do this, and I mean, I was working double shifts. It's music. It's like,
right.
We're there, we're literally just playing music, you know. It was in the hot ass sun sometimes, but
right.
We were out there just playing music. And I'm like, man, like, this is cool. And we were bringing in some good money doing that, too, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully Jazzland comes back and it would provide for more upcoming musicians, you know, because that's a hell of an outlet for cats to be able to do, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get into these bands without playing for years.
Yeah.
And really learning your craft.
Exactly,
right?
Man.
And you talked about music theory and all that. I see that in your music.
Yeah,
like, it's just not some cat up there just playing. You know,
you know
everything behind it.
Exactly,
you can hear it in the transitions.
Exactly,
and your music's complicated.
Yes,
it's layered.
And we like it to feel good. In addition to all of that, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And even back at Noka, man, like I said, you know, we're Noka transposer and transcriber, Stravinsky and Chopin and WC, and I'm what? I'm like, why do we have to do this? At the time, I was like, why would we have to do this? Okay, I'll learn it. And we were like analyzing their charts and things like that, man, the scores. It really all paid off, you know what I'm saying? I don't utilize much of it today, but it's good to know it when you need to know
it.
You know what I'm saying? It's there, man. It's there. Even drummers that went there, you know, we say, look, you have drummers and you have musicians, you know. Now musicians,
I got to get a drummer on.
Right, exactly. Now, some drummers are musicians, but all drummers ain't musician, you know. So that's a little thing we always say, messing with drummers who, you know. But overall, that feel is more important than anything, man. Like,
yeah.
If you ain't got that thing, you ain't making it feel good, then, hey, what you playing for? You just stop. You know?
It's funny you say that, because I'm going to ask you a little later on about a drummer.
Yeah,
but,
come on.
So talk about Dirty Dozen. How'd you get into them, man?
So Dirty Dozen. So all this time while I'm at Noka and, you know, playing in the clubs and stuff like that, you know, we were all in our church choir. You know, I was a little kid singing in church choir. But once I picked up my horn, I was like, man, I wonder if I could just play it, you know? So I started asking if I could play with the band at church. They allowed me to play. You know, I wasn't hitting on nothing yet, you know? They would seem to love it, so, you know, it was all good. And then they'd pick up an offering for me at the end of the service so I could get paid. I was like, hey, I manage this at all, you know? Little kid getting paid from church. Hey, every Sunday, we keep this thing popping, you know? So at church, I had a friend of mine. Her name was her name is Stacy Towns. Her mom was Tracy Towns. So let me back up just right quick, too. One of the things that really got me into playing music, though, even before the Stooges and all of that, was hearing this band called the Dirty Dozen Brass Band.
Yep.
And once I heard that band, I said, man, I'm going to play with this band one day, or I'm going to have my own band like it. This is when I was, it's like 15 when I heard it, you know, no, 14 when I heard it. I said, man, this band, it was an album called Ears to the Wall.
Yeah.
And that's their funk album.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't the traditional, my introduction to Dirty Dozen, although we all knew Feet Can't Fail Me Now and all of that, this was like my formal introduction to Dirty Dozen Brass Band.
Yeah, kind of different than what they're known for.
It was way different than anything else. It's like they had electric bass, they had keyboards, they had guitar. It was a completely different sound, and it just blew me away. Yeah, like, it said, gotcha. Like, I was like, all right, cool, bet. I said, man, I'm digging the sound. I'm going to play with this band one day. And from there on, I went and studied all of the other music, you know?
Okay.
That's fast forward now. So it's my homegirl's sweet 16. She's having a birthday party right in Gentilly, actually. And hanging out at the party and all of that. You know, we go to a room, and I notice she has like a bunch of CDs and albums and things like that. I'm like, I see like Charlie Parker and John Coltrane, Miles Davis, Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan. I'm like, wait, you into jazz? She said, boy, no. I said, well, you got all these CDs? Like, what? She said, oh, that's my daddy's CDs. I said, oh, all right. She said, yeah, he played trumpet. I said, oh, cool. I said, for who? She said, The Dirty Dozen. I said, what? She said, yeah, The Dirty. I said, where he at? That's what I said. I said, where he at? You know? And she said, and just so happened, you know, The Dozen, man, even when I was touring with them, they were touring still.
Yeah.
Like 300 days out the year. Mm. And I was like, where he at? Little kid. And she said, oh, he's in the other room. It was her birthday, so he was in town, you know? And we all know him as E.T.
Okay.
And his name's F from Town.
Yeah.
So I said, and I put it together. I said, oh, that's your dad. I said, oh. So I kind of like dished the party, and I talked to him like for the rest of the night. So here I am, like this 15-year-old kid talking to him now. And I'm like, hey, man, look, y'all ever need a trombone player? You know, give me a call and stuff like that, you know? And he's, all right, do it. I'll let you know. I said, all right, cool, bet. So 3 years later, I'm 19. I'm working at Jazzland. Playing at Jazzland. And apparently they needed a new trombone player because that trombone player got into a situation, you know? He kept talking to them. He was like, hey, y'all sure this dude could play? Because he had never heard me play. Like,
okay.
Yeah, right. They're like, and they said, oh, yeah, he be playing at church. And he's like, yeah, daddy be playing at church. And and everybody be screaming and shouting, yeah, play that on, Sam, play that on. So he's like, all right. So he called me. I'm at Jazzland. He's like, hey, dude, Sam, what's up, man? I say, hey, what's happening, bro? See, has E.T.? I said, yeah, what's happening with you? He said, hey, you want to go on the road? I said, with who? He said, Dirty Dozen. I said, yeah. I said, hell yeah. I said, when? He said, we leave tomorrow. I said, tomorrow? He said, yeah. I said, let me call my mom and make sure it's okay. So I said, wait, how long are we going for? He said, 3 months. I said, 3 months?
Wow.
I said, ooh, Lord. I said, all right, let me call you right back. So I get off the phone, call my mom, and she, you know, she added about me going to college and all that.
Right.
I was like, I'm going to figure it out, you know. So I got off the phone with him, and I called him back. I said, yeah, I could do it. So I left Jazzland because I had to go pack.
Oh,
so I left Jazzland. I said, I got to go. They understood. I rolled out. And then that started my run with the Dirty Dozen, man.
Wow.
And we drove in a van, like eight, nine of us, with all of our, no trailer, all of our gear, everything. From New Orleans to Rhode Island, it was torture. it was hard,
and
man.
They go hard,
bro. And I was right there with, and that was like my introduction to the road life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And also, within those 3 months, we did a show with a band called Widespread Panic.
Yeah.
And I'm just, you know, I'm a 19-year-old little black kid. I don't know who the Widespread Panic is. I'm like, we out in Keystone, Colorado, man. Which mountains is beautiful out there, you know, peaceful. But it's nothing. Nothing's out there. Just a stage and us.
Yep.
I'm like, man, what are we doing out here in the middle of nowhere, you know? And they were like, oh, we're playing with Panic. I said, okay, whatever. That's just, I don't know. I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. We get behind the stage, you know, hanging out with, you know, JB and Dave, you know, and Sonny and Mikey, you know, all the cats. I'm like, all right, cool, what's up? They're like, okay, we go home and practice these songs. Like, Using Me Up, Superstition. I said, okay, I heard these before. I know these songs. All right, cool. Let's roll with it. So we did. Oh, Sandra Jordan was on the gig, too.
All right.
Yeah, so it was a good time, man. So I'm like, all right, cool. We're going to play for nobody. In my head, I'm like, we're going to play for nobody. But all right, cool.
No idea.
Man, the showtime came and they had 20,000 people. I'm like, where the hell these people came from? Like, because it was literally like not a sight, bro. Like, no one was there at all. Right. And got out there for showtime and stepped on the stage and cried. I said, oh, God damn. I said, and from that moment on, that changed my whole outlook on music. I was like, I didn't know it could be like, I knew I wanted to play music and travel the world, but I didn't know it could be, you know, like that magnitude. And I said, this is like ridiculous. So that like really woke me up, man. But yeah, that was my introduction to Panic. I was like, damn.
Yeah, that's a big introduction.
Yeah,
they draw hard, man.
Man, who you telling? I was like, man, we've done. I mean, you know, we recorded with them. We've done a few other shows with them.
Yep.
As well as with a bunch of other artists too. You know, so
yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You've gotten to play with a lot of people.
Yeah, man.
Alan Toussaint comes to mind.
Oh man, and Alan. So the Alan thing happened after I left Dirty Dozen just to pursue my thing. You know, so okay, so with Dirty Dozen, I got the opportunity to play with, you know, Panic and Government Mule, Dave Matthews, James Brown, man.
That's awesome.
Everybody, you know what I'm saying? Like Modest Mouse. The list goes on and on. It's like so many artists, man, like up there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So then I was like, okay, like this is cool, Dirty Dozen, you know, I love these guys. I still love them today, you know? They're the reason why I even like decided to play music, like for real. I'm like, all right, cool. But I got to kind of like find myself and do my own thing, you know? So when I left Dirty Dozen to pursue my own thing, literally like 2 days later, I get a call. It's from Reginald Toussaint. Hey, is Big Sam? I say, yeah, what's up? He said, hey, man, it's Reginald Toussaint, man, Alan Toussaint's son, whatever. All right, cool. I say, yeah, well, look, my dad wants you to play with us. I said, huh? Like, yeah, my dad wants you to play with us. And, you know, I said, all right, cool. Like, send me the rehearsals and all that. So, man, that was like my hookup with Alan. This is back in like 2000, this is 2003 or 2004.
Okay.
And I was like, this is crazy, man. So that I hooked up with Alan all the way back then. I played with Alan whenever he was his big man up until he passed away, man.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And even with Alan, man, I got to play with so many other people. And then Alan hooked up with Elvis Costello.
Yep.
And we did that whole tour. We did like that tour for like 2 years. We did a tour overseas, then we did a tour in the States. And they featured me a lot too, man. They showed a lot of love to me, man. Even now when Elvis comes in town, like he'll hit me up so we can hang and everything, you know. And he'll sit in. Like we hang, you know, like Elvis is a real dude.
Yeah, and
you
he's
know
here in New Orleans a lot.
A lot.
It surprised me when they hooked up. I don't know why. Because it just seemed like an odd combination.
It's just two geniuses.
But
like
they.
Yeah, man. It I was shocked, you know, especially when they called for the, and of course, this is like years after already, this is after Katrina, and that's what it was. Alan called because they want to record with Elvis. So we did, this session was after Katrina. We did a week in L.A., then we did a week here in New Orleans.
Okay.
Right here. No, not here. I'm lying. Piety.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
we did
at
Piety Studios. Yeah. I'm just so used to going to Esplanade now. I'm like, right, you know. Right. But yeah, man, and it was just like, the chemistry that they had, though, man, was just like amazing. I was like, I can't believe that. I was just sitting there like in awe the whole time. I could not believe that I was sitting there playing with these giants, you know? And the funniest thing about that tour is that the horn section, I'm sitting there, you know, they're going over like old Lee Dorsey songs and stuff like that. And well, I'm showing them Lee Dorsey songs that I love. And I didn't realize Alan really wrote these songs at that time. I said, man, but listen to the horn section on this, man. They're like, oh, yeah, we know that, man. I said, man, you hear these songs, man? Look how they sticking. I said, yeah, we got to tighten it up more like that. I said, I got to get on it with y'all. I said, y'all killing it. I got to get on it with y'all and just tighten it up. I said, oh, yeah, but that song's on the album. I said, what? He said, yeah, that's us on the album. So come to find out, Alan's horn section back then were like Lee Dorsey and even like they're all like from Chocolate Milk.
Right,
because he formed that group.
Right.
So it's the horn section from Chocolate Milk and like that's who I was playing with.
That's
and I was
awesome.
Like, man, Groove City and all that. Come on, man. Come on, bro. So I'm learning all this as I'm going. I'm like, man, this is just legendary right here, man, you know? So it's just an honor to be, you know, being a presence with those guys and share the stage with these guys. I mean, they're my friends now. So
right.
I'm like, man, like you know, y'all my people. We hang, you dig?
He was such an amazing guy.
So sweet,
you
man.
And I were talking about, we both grew up in Gentilly. He lived in Bayou St. John.
Yeah.
He used to eat in our restaurant every Wednesday night for stewed chicken.
Nice.
He'd show up in that two-tone brown Rolls Royce.
Yes.
And as nice as could be.
Yeah.
Kept to himself, but never minded people walking up to him, chatting
right.
with him, wanting to just
man.
Shake his hand.
Such a sweet, humble guy, man.
And just a musical genius, man.
Yes, definitely, without a doubt. Alan and Elvis, they are the reason why I like to treat my cats the way that I treat them. You know what I'm saying?
All right.
Man, when I'm with them, everything was first class. You know, I ain't making any kind of money. These guys are like millionaires. They have hits for days. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But even still, as much as I can, I like to pay my guys well. I treat them with respect. You know what I'm saying? Everywhere we go, I want to make sure everything is fair, and I don't want them to have to worry about anything. And when I was traveling with those guys, I didn't have to worry about nothing at all,
nice.
Man. Everything was just like, here's what it is. Let's do this. My job was easy. I had to learn the music.
Right.
Play the music. Don't mess up. And that's it. I was like, all right, cool. Like, this is like easy, man. Easy living, you know, for real.
So tell me about how you went from Dirty Dozen to Funky Nation.
When I actually started Funky Nation while I was playing with Dirty Dozen.
All right.
But I was never here. You know,
okay.
I was on the road.
You're on the road.
I had my band without me performing at the Funky Butt every Sunday. Because that was a thing back then. Like we had Sunday nights rocking at the Funky Butt. So then we started doing a thing like, we're like, who is Big Sam? Or where is Big Sam? Or something like that. So they never knew when I was going to come. You know, and sometimes if I'm out with a dozen, you know, we have a Sunday off, I'll just fly home and come and do the show and then fly right back out. It became a thing. And I was always told, you know, like, you know, the band is always killing, you know, without me. But when I come, I just add so much extra fire to it, like that. I say, oh, cool. Like, you know, once again, at that time, and I really thinking about what I add to anything at all. Just doing it because I love it. I'm having fun. It's just what it is, you know. So, man, once I did that, you know, I did that for so long, and then I was like, okay, if I really want my band to get like what the Dirty Dozen is, or right. a lot of the other bands that I met on that road, like even like a Robert Randolph or Carl Denson, all these different acts, I said, man, I gotta jump, you know, I gotta jump off that cliff and make it happen. That transition, I thought it was gonna be rough, right. but I got a call from Alan. So then I'm playing with Alan a lot, and then even after Alan, that's when it really started to like, okay, that was around 2008 where we didn't like do a full on tour. Mm-hmm. So I was able to focus on Funkination more. And from there, it was hitting the road hard, man. I got my van.
Yep.
And we were like hitting the road now. We were doing like 250 dates a year.
Wow.
For a long time, man. Up until when I had kids.
We're going to get to that.
We're going to get to that. I had this fast forward a lot. Because, you know, we play, you know, Austin City Limits, Bonnaroo.
Yeah. You guys play big places?
Yeah, big festivals, man. Oh, shout out to Dirty Dozen too, man. Because one of the songs that I wrote when I was 16 is called Ain't Nobody Party.
Uh-huh.
When we went into the studio, is on that album, Medicated Magic by Dirty Dozen. It had Norah Jones on the album, mm-hmm. Dr. John, Oludara, Robert Randolph. It had the Cats on it, man. JB was on it. It was stacked. And they used my song for that album, man. They made it the first song on the album. I said, that was great for them or whoever was on record label at that time. I appreciate it, you know. And we also did the first Bonnaroo ever. You know?
Really?
Yeah, and by us doing the first Bonnaroo ever, they used my song actually on the DVD and CD, you know.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, man, this is great. And they both went gold, too, I think. The DVD and CD both sold like 100,000 copies or something like that.
Wow.
And, you know, back then, artists really got paid
from the
music. Now, you look at if you make something from a stream, man, you know.
Right.
So I was like, yes, this is lovely. Nah, but that was cool, man. Yeah, I appreciate those cats, all of them.
And you guys been going now for, gosh, what is it, 15 years,
huh? No, it's over 20 years,
over
man.
Over 20 years.
Yeah, because remember, I started while I was playing with them.
Oh, right.
So even though I wasn't here, I mean, technically the band was still started, you know. And we'll still do the festival. We were still doing Jazz Fest. We've been doing that for probably like 25 years now, you know.
Yeah.
Jazz Fest and French Quarter Fest, I don't do that often anymore. But we were still out here doing all of the festivals around the city.
Yeah.
We mostly played Funky Butt, because I ended up buying the Funky Butt.
Oh, did
yeah,
you? I didn't know that.
Yeah, right. Ended up buying the Funky Butt. And it was cool. It lasted for like 2-3 years leading up to Katrina.
Okay.
And then we were going to move that club and put it on Frenchman Street, because our Frenchman was about to start popping.
Yep.
It's way different now, man. But anyway.
It is.
Frenchman was about to pop, so we were going to move it there. We were going to move it into, the landlord wanted more money, because Katrina happened.
Right.
Our plan was to, you know, move everything to storage, get out of that building, because we had slumlords on Rampart. Katrina was coming. We said, okay, cool, we'll leave town, whatever, come back on Monday, and then we'll finish sign a lease on Frenchman Street. Never happened because Katrina.
Right.
So when we did finally come back and try to sign a lease, the owner of the building, which I get, but don't get still, they wanted more money than what we agreed upon, you know? Mm. So I said, well, we can't do that. So then we thought about moving to Ferret. It just didn't work out after that. It was like, okay, it's all good, you know?
Yeah.
People ask me if I want to bring it back. I still have the painting, though. If anybody want to know, I still got that funky but later painting, you know? People ask if I'm going to ever bring it back. And I don't know. You know, sometimes I want to, but then I'm like, I don't want to deal with musicians. You know, I'm like you know, I love all my cats. I don't want to have to deal with nobody on
that
level.
You don't want to hurt them.
Yeah, I don't want to have to deal with nobody on that level anymore. You know, I'm like, it's cool, but nah, you know.
And you guys have kept up a big touring schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, you play a lot in the city, but you play a lot all over the place.
Well, and like now what I'm doing, so that 250 dates a year, that lasted up until, you know, I have twin boys, they're 6 years old, love them today, you know, Ramon and Sammy. But when my kids were born, I had like a 2-month tour lined up. So a month after they were born, I had to leave town for like just about
rough.
2 months, man. And I was like, I can't do this like this, you know? So what I did was I started doing a weekly at the Jazz Playhouse on Wednesdays. So I said, okay, this makes sense, because it gives me a reason to be home Monday through Wednesday. I can still leave Thursday through Sunday if I needed to.
Okay.
Come back home. I can still see my sons and my family when I'm at home, and we're good. So it was working. Everything was great. I said, all right, cool, you know? And then the pandemic hit. So I'm like, oh, man, we got to figure this out. So maybe like, you know, everybody was like, oh, we're going to have 2 weeks off. And
I said, not gonna be a thing.
Let's see what happens. Matter of fact, that day that the pandemic happened, well, where they shut everything down, we had 3 shows scheduled that day. We had a show in Baton Rouge. We had to come back here, actually, for my son's school. We had to do a private right here. I forget what they call this building over here, but the show was going to be in there. And then we had Tipitina's that night. Both gigs canceled on me. We got the Tipitina's, did our sound check. And then he walked in, he was like, sorry, Sam, we gotta, I said, all right, cool. So they still took care of me though, so we were good. But up until then, man, like, the pandemic happened and we started performing in my driveway.
Really?
Yeah, so, you know, and we gained a lot of new fans that way.
Yeah.
You know, and we started doing like every Sunday. You know, I was doing like maybe twice a week. Then I said, okay, we'll do Sunday mornings, you know. And then we gained a lot of new fans like that. And some people now, they would just like turn on their Facebook Live and like have a little party while we're performing, you know.
Yep.
And put it on their TV and stream it while we're performing. And it was cool, man. So, like I said, we gained new fans. And all of our current fans, you know, everybody was tipping and sending money in. So that pretty much kept us afloat during the pandemic.
That's awesome.
You know, luckily. I mean, because, you know, we weren't considered real, what to call it? Being a musician wasn't considered a real job by the government.
Oh, right.
So it took us a long time, all of us, to get any kind of real assistance, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, even though we have tax returns and everything, right. They're like, nah, we need more information on this. I'm like, bro, come on, bro. So anyway, that's what happened with that. And now I'm only going out for weekend runs, man. You
really?
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
because you're still keeping the gig at Jazz.
Yeah, I'm still doing it on
Jazz
Wednesday,
Playhouse.
The Jazz,
right?
Playhouse on Wednesdays, yeah, at 7:30.
Yep.
I'm doing that every Wednesday. It's a smaller version of the band, though. It's not the full on band.
Okay.
Yeah, we still turn up a little bit. That's all I can, you know. I turn up. That's what we do.
Right.
But we're not like tearing a whole roof off the sucker, you know.
Right.
To half the roof off the sucker.
Right. Right. You know?
But yeah, even now, like, I'm still traveling. We're still traveling the world, man. But it's more like, you know, I'll go out for a weekend run, maybe 1 or 2 days. But like, what, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, we went to Aspen, but we stayed out there for like 4 days.
Okay.
Because it was one spot, same location.
So you can go and come back.
Exactly. And feel like where I am now, man. You know, I know they have other cats older than me that's like still hitting the road hard and all that. But for where I am and where I'm comfortable at, I'm like, I don't want to do all of that, like hitting the road.
You got to balance it with your family.
Exactly.
Life,
yeah, I did it for like 20 years already, like hitting it hard, man. All my back still hurt from the road, you know? But for me, the well balance for me is like going out when I want to and in real life when the gig is paying, you know?
Yeah.
I go out and they're paying, we make our money, and then we come back home, you know? And we all get to spend time with our families. And other guys, they get to do other gigs too, you know?
Yep.
So it balances out. So I'm not even tripping.
And people can see you. You play a lot in a lot of festivals. You play Wednesdays at the Square.
Yep.
All right, we were talking before we came on. I got twins as well. They're a little bit older than yours. They're about to be 12. Shout out to Olivia and Sophia.
Yeah, you're right.
We take them to Wednesdays at the Square.
Nice.
Olivia put on a little hat with a sign that said reporter, and she took notes at one of your concerts.
Yeah.
She wanted to interview you. She needs an interview. She needs an autograph, by the way. She was excited about this.
No problem.
But that's a place where we see you guys at festivals, and you are able to blow it out with the big band.
Oh, yeah.
And you got a nice mix. Like, you're right. Even without a microphone, you are loud.
Yeah, it's pretty loud, man.
But for being a quiet guy, you were telling me, when you get on stage, you're a whole other persona, man.
Yeah, because I'm pretty laid back. Anybody tell you, if we're just hanging out, I'm just cool, you know, soft-spoken. I'm not really, like, out there. But, you know, when I get on stage, it all just comes out through the music. The music pulls it out you know what I'm saying? Yeah, otherwise, I'm pretty laid back.
And
know?
How would you describe, I mean, obviously the band is called Big Sam's Funky Nation.
Yeah.
But how would you describe the music?
It's always hard to describe yourself, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Especially when you hear so many different takes on like what is that you do, you know. I like to just call it a good time. I mean, it's funky
because I think it's funky, but you got a mix of rock in there.
Oh,
you got some traditional jazz in there. There's a lot of influences in there,
you know. And like we all say it, but it's like our own musical pot of gumbo, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
that's a good description.
And all of us in New Orleans, we have that thing, you know, because one, there's no other place in the world like New Orleans, so we already got our own bag. You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So with us having that and adding all of our other influences, it just, you can't really describe what it is, you know.
It's a mix, man.
Because I'm a fan of P-Funk. You know, you get up down to the funk. I like P-Funk, James Brown, Prince, Mars Day and the Time, The Gap Band, Rick James. Those are like some of my main like funk influences, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you get to New Orleans, you got like Dirty Dozen Frasmen, you got Alan Toussaint, you got the Never Brothers and the Meters, and it's like, okay, you know, Dr. John, you got all these cats. And then you get to the rock bands, I got like Nine Inch Nails, Pantera, you know, Mute Man.
You guys like, sit in with Better Than Ezra a lot.
Yeah, Better Than Ezra, and those are my homeboys, man. Like we've been
so
doing a lot of
there's
shows
my
together.
Drummer reference for you. I'm going to put you on the spot. Is he a musician or is he a drummer?
He's a musician. He's a musician. Know why? Because he, oh man. Which one?
Yeah, the newer one. I'll say the newer. He's not new.
Yeah, because, they're both musicians.
Yeah.
Reason being, because they can both lock into time, and they know what they're doing. Even when they take their solos, they take the cowbell solo and they go around the drum. They're playing, they know what they're doing, you know what I'm saying? And it's intentional. Like, that's another thing. When you perform, you got to be intentional in what you're doing, you know? And those cats, both of them, you know, killing.
Well, and I love to see you guys with them because it's just this nice smash.
It is, man.
It's got the rock music.
Yeah.
And they got a little, they got their own New Orleans vibe, but then you bring the horn section, bring you guys out.
Yes.
It's always fun to watch you guys together.
Thanks, man. And that happened because we did a tour together. They called me. I don't remember what year this was. It was a while ago. But they called, man. We did like a 2-month tour together, you know?
Nice.
You know, that's how we became family and friends, man. And, you know, they ever need me to record on some stuff, I'll show up and knock it out, you know? And same, you know? So we're going to, you know, hopefully make some more stuff happen, you know?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I love about your band is it's just so wide.
Yeah.
Like, that funk is there. There's no,
it's
right?
There.
It's there. But there's so many other influences.
Right.
And you guys, you seem so collaborative. You're always hanging out with other bands.
Oh, yeah.
Mixing it up, up the guys. It's,
yeah, you have
it's
to,
just,
man.
You have to. Like you said, New Orleans is such a unique place.
It is, man.
But it gives you this, like, gumbo, like you said, of just different musicians to play with, different influences all the time.
Yes.
So what's next for Funky Nation?
Man, you know what? Like, on the business side of things, everybody's like, man, you did songs in the Key of Funk, Volume 1. When are you going to do it too?
Yeah.
It ain't happening, bro.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Know why? Because the industry is so jacked up, man. We don't get to see any money from the streams.
Right.
You know, so putting out money for, you know, hats off to the cats that are still putting out full-length albums. And y'all know the struggle. Y'all know what it is. So y'all see those numbers, you know. But it's like, even putting out a single, man, you're going in the red, you know.
Yep.
Unless it gets picked up by something on TV, a commercial or something like that. If you're not getting that, man, you're literally, even if you do it all yourself without hiring any musicians,
sure,
you're going into red.
You see it now, right?
Yeah.
Musicians are only making money by getting out in front of people.
Exactly. And luckily for me, you know, I've been able to get, you know, some of my songs on something. Like, the last single I did is called It's the Weekend.
Yeah.
And that one's, like, different than anything else. That's more like a hip-hop kind of thing. Hip-hop, R&B kind of vibe. But I'm like, once again, that was intentional. It's like, it's the weekend. It's a party kind of weekend song. So no matter what, guess what? I feel like that's going to live forever, you know?
Yep.
So you always have a weekend, you know? It's the weekend, baby.
It's a good song. You know, it's different, man. It's different mix a little bit.
So that one was like a HBCU marching band.
Uh-huh. I can see it.
Meets hip-hop and R&B funk, you know?
Yeah.
Got the 808s, got the heavy horns, you know? And I got my homegirl Jelly on the singing, got Pell rapping on it, you know, man. Got Wild Wayne, legendary Wild Wayne from here in New Orleans on Q93. He's doing an introduction to it, so it's off the chain, man. When I wrote on Mardi Gras New Orleans. Now let me say this. I was not trying to remake the other Mardi Gras New Orleans.
Right.
People thought I was trying. No, that's not what happened. I wrote a song, and that was the hook. They have songs with the same titles, you know?
Yep.
So I wasn't trying to, like, you know, get a play off the original, but this is my original song.
Right.
So it sounds nothing alike.
Right.
It's completely different. But
totally.
even that one, man, people love that song. And during Mardi Gras season, you know, every night, you hear it now. And I'm like, you know, and that's one thing Alan taught me. He was like, you know, with everything that you do, you want to be intentional. You want to let them know that, I meant to do that. And I'm like, right on. Like, you know, so that's one of the most important things I learned from him, man. Like, besides being humble and being a sweet guy, being respectful towards others, you know what I'm saying? Never being too busy to make time for people, you know, want to autograph or picture, things like that, you know? Like, when it comes to the music, be intentional and let people know, look, I know you hear it, but I want you to know that I really meant to do this. So do it like this, like, exaggerate it, you know, exaggerate everything that you do when you perform. And, man, yeah, Alan was great, man.
He was great. And, you know, that's one of the things that strikes me about you. One of the reasons I wanted to interview you is your sincerity. It comes across on stage.
Thanks,
I know enough. I know enough people that you and I both know that you treat people right.
Yeah.
You care about that. You care about, you mentioned your family. You care about other people's families.
Definitely.
Look, being a musician's a tough gig, I imagine. You're on the road. You're scrambling for gigs.
Yeah.
You're, you know, trying to find replacements, all that stuff. But you treat people the right way.
Yes. And that's all, you know, I try to tell people that. I don't care, you know, people have their different beliefs and all that. I say, I don't care what you believe in, just treat people right, you know, and don't be an asshole. Just treat people right and, you know, be honest, you know, like, be cool, you know, like, that's it. it's easy, you know?
And I think that comes across on stage. I mean, you guys are a very welcoming band. Like, you cannot go to a Funky Nation show and sit still.
Right.
Like,
I hope not.
You guys do a great job of pulling people in.
Yeah.
People up, they dance, and even if they don't know the music, they're just vibing with it.
And that's what I love so much, man. I was just telling my wife, like, two nights ago, I said, it's crazy that, like, we go out here and we do so many shows, and people that's never heard of us, some songs that, you know, we do a lot of originals when we're performing, you know, people that never heard a song before, they'll like start singing it, and then it'll be like, oh, then, you know, I look people up on the stage, you know, we hug people, man, it's a family affair, you know what I'm saying, it's music, and it's just crazy that we do those kind of things, and people are like, I can see it in their eyes when I'm performing, that like, they're really enjoying themselves, you know, even people that can't stand up sometimes, because you might be in a theater or something, and they're like, they want to get up, they're like, they're still doing this in the chair, and putting their hands up, you know, we did a show at the Carver Theater one time, the lady turned 99 years old. Man, she had her cane. She came on that dance floor dance. She got down to the ground.
Really?
And got back. I said, I don't want to hear no excuses from nobody else in the world. You know, me and the Fessor, my trumpet player, Drew the Fessor Dayham, shout out to him. He'll tell him every show, we say, hey, it's time to get low. But, oh, I can't, my back, my knees. He said, hey, we got this 90. We saw this 99 year old woman. It was, and she did, man. She was killing it on her birthday, too.
I can't wait to, it's coming. It's coming, hopefully, not too distant future for the Dew Drop In to reopen.
We just did
an episode with them about it, and I can't wait to see you guys perform there.
It's going to be all the, have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't been in yet. Have you been in?
Ooh, yes.
I've seen the pictures. It looks great.
It's going to be off the chain, bro.
I can't wait.
It's going to be epic. Yeah.
And coming back in original.
Legacy.
They have done such a great job of trying to bring that back to what it was.
Yes,
and improve it, of course, but bring it back. I can't wait to see a Big Sam show in there.
I can't wait either. Especially, I mean, in the sound system too, though, man. It's going to be bumping.
Everything is first class.
The colors. I mean, it's going to be so much. And it's going to be a hotel too. They're going to bring the hotel back
too.
So,
which is amazing. You know,
it's going to be great.
You think about that. So just for listeners that maybe didn't catch that episode, that hotel was there basically because that was in the Jim Crow South, man. Yep. People didn't have a place to stay.
Nope.
So they had a hotel so that musicians could stay.
Yep.
And now they're so dedicated to making it like it was. There's going to be a hotel there again. Now, thankfully, we have moved on. We got problems, certainly, but we have moved on. But there's going to be a small hotel there.
Yeah.
The rooms are going to be named after famous musicians that perform there.
That's right.
And you got just so much history there. I cannot imagine as a musician what that's going to be like to get on that stage.
I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it right now. But I'm like,
it's exciting.
Like, it's so exciting, man. Even when I got the invite to, like, you know, go in and check it out, you know, give my two cents on what I think they should do. They had a meeting with, like, about 20 of us, man.
Yeah.
And we all just went in, gave out, like, you know, like, hey, you can do this, you can do that. You can bring in these kind of acts, you know what I'm saying? You can do, and they were better receptive to it, man. So I can't wait.
It's coming close. We're recording this in late October, and they're any month now. They're just trying to get it done, man.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
They got the sign up.
I told him too. I said, man, I thought you was full of it. Because he came to the playoffs actually.
Okay.
He was telling me about it. I said, yeah. I said, all right. I said, all right, cool. I said, I just want you to know. People tell me this all the time.
People have tried for years.
I've heard it over and over and over again, man. I said, good luck. I wish you to, you know. Then when I saw him, I said, ooh. I said, you did it. He said, Sam, when I tell you something, I said, I can't say that on the air, but yeah, And he did it, man. I was like, they did it. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of people and a lot of different parties involved.
But they brought people in, like you're saying. They brought musicians in.
Yeah.
They brought people in to say, is this authentic and is this going to work?
Because they really care and they want to know what we think, like Jane, and what does it take to make a musician feel at home, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it might be one of the most caring spots in the city, man, once it's open, you know?
It's going to be great.
Yeah,
right?
I can't wait for.
I mean, if anything, it's going to cause a problem in the neighborhood with parking and I know they're worried about that. They're worried about how do we not cause this neighborhood to gentrify,
They're going to have a parking lot.
Are they?
The parking lot is going to be on the right-hand side
of
the building.
Oh, on the other side. Okay.
Yeah, so they got all of that.
It's nice.
So the overflow it wouldn't be that bad.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be. Because you could fit at least maybe like 25, 30 cars in there. So it's going to be nice.
It's a small venue, but it's going to be great.
Yeah, because they can only put maybe 150, 200 in there.
Yeah.
You know, but
it's going to be jamming.
Hey, catch a lift anyway.
Right,
hey,
there you
do
go.
Lift
and
Uber.
So you have some drinks and not worry about it,
Exactly. You know, get home safely.
So what's the future for Big Sam and the Funky Nation?
Oh, man, I'm just, you know, I'm going to keep working, throwing out these singles too and having features. I'm big on features now too.
Okay.
So that's what I've been working on. I have a lot.
Yeah,
I have a lot of songs.
You never want to sit still.
Yeah, not at all. I have a lot of songs that I've been working on that, I mean, they're just unreleased, really. I mean, so if I want to just put out an album and lose money instantly, I can just I can just put it out and I'm like, hey, here's a whole catalog right here, you know. But nah, man, I'm big on features now because I realized, you know, you have to collab more too. And, you know, and it's good for me. It's good for the other artists too because now they're getting my fans and I'm getting theirs. It's cool. People get to see you more, you know. So just like the last one, I had, I got to tell you this. This is a problem. I met Angelica Jelly Jones. That's my homegirl, man. Love her like a sis. I met her during Hurricane Isaac, right? She did a show with me for the first time at Tip of Teen. That's when I did a Big Sam and Friends show. Like, people had lights out and all that. Tips had just got their lights on. And that Tips was packed top to bottom. We killed that show, man. And my other homegirl, who I haven't seen in a long time now, Lanika, I had her singing back up with me. And she brought Jelly on. So that's how I met Jelly. And I mean, no offense to anybody. Look, singers in New Orleans, especially the ladies, y'all know I love y'all voices. When I heard Jelly's voice for the first time, I said, oh, my God, this is like... If I could have her in my band and just have her sing with me all the time, this would be golden, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, as time went on, she was singing with Tank and the Bangers for the most part. But, you know, once I finally said, okay, I got to get some features on my album, Jelly has been like my go-to, you know? And I told her recently, I said, I done got you on 3 songs now as a feature. Matter of fact, Mardi Gras Noir, I didn't put feature because she was just only singing like just the backup part, you know? But, I mean, she's singing the hook. She's killing me, you know? It should say feature, but... I have on 3 songs now. Mardi Gras New Orleans, Let's Boogie, It's the Weekend. And I said, I'm going to find somebody else to use next time. I said, I don't want to have to keep. She said, no, bro, keep calling me. You know, I said, all right, it's cool. I said, I gotta spread the love. I got to, like, reach. Because we have some amazing vocalists.
So much in New Orleans.
Yeah, man, we have so many amazing vocalists here in the city. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to do that. It's only fair, you know. I did 3. I'm good. Let's keep it moving now. You know what I'm saying? That's my homegirl, though, man. Like, she's such a, so talented, you know.
Yeah.
And she's singing with Galactic now full time. So. Yeah. You know, and her thing is killing too.
Yeah.
But yeah. But
and of course, Galactic took over Tipitina's, which I think has been a great move,
man,
for the music community.
Tips made a complete turnaround. I'm like, God damn. Like,
they.
Once again, a venue that actually cares. Yep. You know what I'm saying?
Right. It's owned by musicians. They have turned it into a, not that it wasn't, but a really welcoming place.
Yeah,
man.
For real.
And they're dedicated to getting a lot of people exposure.
I'm going to say this on air though. But if I can only get a show over there doing Jazz Festival Tips.
There you go, Stanton. If you're listening, man.
Don't make me call you up. You know.
So there you are. I know some of those guys listen to the show.
Yeah, I know.
So, if you heard it from Sam, call him, man.
Call me for one of the Jazz Fest hits. Let me get on up in there. Now, you know what it is. Every venue, they have their regulars, you know?
Yeah.
Just like me at Blue Now, I had to stop doing one of the shows because I'm like, it's kind of overkill now. You know what I'm saying? Because I would do the first weekend with Funky Nation. I do Game of Bones with me and Corey Henry on that Wednesday in between. And then I would do like a funky but revisited kind of show where it'd be like me and a bunch of all-stars on that following Sunday. I'm like, damn, that's me at Blue Now 3 times during this time. I got to break it up, you know? So I try to do it at some other venues now. But I understand you have your lineup that you've been rocking with for decades at this point, and it works.
Right, yeah.
But.
They like a lot of people blow out a big Jazz Fest celebration. But yeah, there's room for Big Sam and
the
Funky
Nation.
Get your
boy in there. Put me on Thursday. I'm good.
There you go. So all we got to do is make the phone call now. We got it
That's
all set
right.
up.
That's right.
I did want to mention, that's a great time. Look, you can see you guys at Jazz Playhouse. You can see you at the festivals. You can see you at Jazz Fest. Around Jazz Fest, that's sort of an insider tip, man.
Yeah.
Don't blow it all out during the day. The shows at night are a fabulous way to experience just incredible music. And you get that time where there's so many artists in town, you get people sitting in.
Yeah.
And you just get
so
this
many
incredible collaboration. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah,
such a great time for music in the city.
My boy Skerrick, man, shout out to Skerrick. He called me a couple of years ago, and I got to play with Pearl Jam. I'm like, God damn. So we did a show. And Jazz Fest. We performed at Jazz Fest.
I was like,
oh, man, this is dope, man. So things like that. You never know what's going to happen, you know?
Yep. And you walk out on that stage with 100,000 people in the crowd.
It's just insane.
Yeah.
Not for me now, because I played with so many of those bands. Not Funky Nation at that magnitude, but so many of those bands where I'm used to it. When I expect
you
it.
Walk
it
out and
I'm like, I know what this is about to be now, you know? I'm ready for it.
As opposed to that first widespread show.
That first, I'm like, God damn, what? Now, I expect it now. If it's not like that, I'm like, oh, man, you know? But, yeah, But like Pearl Jam, I mean.
Yep. Yeah, I saw that.
The Chili
show.
Peppers, all those, yeah. Man, bruh. Like, these cats put on shows. And that's what I like, too. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I always strive to do, is put on a show when I'm doing a show. Not just we're on stage and standing there playing songs.
And your shows
and playing the same groove over and over again. You know what I'm saying?
Immersive kind of. You can't sit there. I mean, yeah. I don't know how you can. You can't sit there and not be involved in your show. It is a show. It's not a performance.
Pull in, you know?
Yeah.
Pull in, make it
exciting.
Get
people on stage.
Exactly. You know, like, interact with the crowd. Don't just sit there and just...
And it shows. And it looks like you guys are having a good time.
Yeah, we have... You know? I tell you, we have a blast. Y'all have no idea. Hey, look, y'all have no idea how much fun we're having on stage. Because even when I turn around, we're like laughing about something. I'm like, hey, I ain't do this. And we, you know, we just got little eyes and cues that we'll do, you know.
Yeah.
And bow, we'll do something else. All right, cool. But I mean, we've been doing this so long now, man. You know, we know what it is. And we know what the next person is thinking. Even when I get the new cats and the newer cats coming in, they pick up on the vibe quick and they know what it is, you know.
And I love, you know, we didn't even talk about this, but I love that in New Orleans, you can be a trombonist and be and have a band.
Exactly.
And be successful.
Exactly.
I mean, everybody knows Trombone Shorty.
Yeah.
Bonorama is another one. You guys, Funky Nation.
I'll say this. We're the ones, like the ones you just named. For the most part, we're the ones that paved the way to do what we're all doing right now.
Right.
But I guess to really get it started, you got to give a shout out to like Fred Wesley. You know what I'm saying? Fred had the JBs because that was his baby. You know, he wrote a lot of those songs for James. You dig what I'm saying? But like to be out here and like putting on shows and like touring and like traveling the world. And yeah, I want to say that we paved the way for the younger cats coming up, you know?
And that's why it gets back to, that's why it's so important to have kids in school participate,
exactly.
Man, to get that next generation.
Exactly.
Right.
You have to, man. You know, otherwise, you know, the culture's going to get lost.
Right.
And we can't have that. We ain't going to let that happen, you know?
No, I hope not.
Yeah, nah.
And that gets back to the Dewdrop Inn coming back.
Exactly.
So important to me because you see this culture can easily get lost.
Exactly.
You don't have people coming up through it. You don't have people appreciating it.
Right.
Right. All those things make a difference. You just talked for 30 minutes about all the influences you've had and all the bands you've been in. Those bands have to exist. Funky Nation has to exist to get those new cats in.
Exactly.
To get them.
And that's why, like, when anyone calls me about, like, doing something for kids, I'm like, all right, cool. I'm... You know, like, you know, we all like to make our money and get paid. But if it's like kids and depending on like what they're requesting of you, I never mind like taking time out and like, you know, giving back. You know what I'm saying? Because you have to do that. Everything can't be about a dollar. You know, some things you have to go and just say, okay, I'll do this. You know, no problem.
And it pays off. Yeah, it pays off for the culture. You do it a lot. Shamar Allen does it a ton.
All the time, man. That's my man. I love Shamar, man. He's another one, man. I feel like his last album they just put out, you know, True Orleans too, man. I feel like that's going to be like another, it's going to be a timeless album. It's classic, man, like nothing but bangers on that, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And if you listen to the lyrics and the feel and the vibe that he has, man, Shamar's a great artist, man, you know what I'm saying? Not just a trumpet player, once again,
right.
You know, like he's one of the ones that understands it's not just standing up there and playing your music and that's it. No, you have a vibe, you know, you're engaging with people, you're getting people involved in what you do, you know what I'm saying? So he's another man, love him to death, you know, and that's what it's about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So if people want to check you out, Jazz Playhouse is the most regular gig.
Yeah,
right?
I do Jazz Playhouse every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. with it's a smaller version of the band. So, you know, if you see the room, you'll understand why.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, it's not
big. And this show, I mean, you know, that show they have tables and chairs, they serve people dinner, but we still get the people up in there, you know. So and I guess this is advertising the show now, but I don't post it really.
Right.
I might share it every now and then, but I feel like if I posted it, it'll become a problem. Like, if I'm, like, really, really pushing that show, I feel like it'll be a problem at the Royal Sinesta. You're like, you know what? We got to figure this out, man, now. Nah, but it's cool. Like, so we just keep it low-key, and it's one of those things where if you know, you know.
Yep.
So if you listen to my show right now, then, hey, you in the know, baby. You dig?
That's right. It's posted on WWOZ's Live Wire, too. But and that's also where you can find out where some of your other performances are when you're playing festivals and out of town and all that stuff. You can check that out.
Yep.
Sam, it has been a pleasure to have
man. Appreciate you, bro.
And hang in there with those kids.
I'm going to call you like, hey, bro. You got some year, but you got two girls.
I got two girls. Ooh. You got two boys. Yeah. Yours are 6. Mine are about to be 12.
I have it easier. You know, I got it easier.
You got it different. I won't say easier. You got it different.
You have two girls.
Yeah.
So we were like, not two girls.
We have to share notes as we go around.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to put a link to the Live Wire and to the Jazz Playhouse so people can check you out. But you ever get a chance, I'm telling you this as a fan, get a chance, go see a show. whether it's at the Jazz Playhouse, you catch them at Wednesdays at the Square, any of the festivals, Jazz Fest, go check out Big Sam and the Funky Nation. It's just been such a pleasure to have you, man.
Oh, thanks, man. It's been an honor, you dude.
Thank you, man.
Anytime.
If you get something from the podcast, please consider leaving a tip via PayPal or Venmo at beyondbourbonst.com. With that, I'm going to turn it over to my daughters to close us out.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do.
Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.